Welcome back to The Frontier. I'm your co-host, no James today. We miss him, but I'm really stoked because we're actually on the SCI campus. We're traveling, taking the show on the road today. And super excited to have Kevin Crowe, head of products and solutions, on the show. Thanks so much, Kevin.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming. Thanks for the road trip.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, it's nice. It's been really good. Maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and how we got here.
Sure. My name is Kevin Crowe. I'm part of the Financial Advisor Division, and we service independent financial advisors. I've been at SEI for 25 years now. So clearly I started when I was 12. And I've been kind of around the company. So I've been in the advisory division, in our institutional division. I spent a little time in technology. I was also in our brokerage side, which interact with our banking clients and our money manager clients. And I've been in this job for probably another 10 years. We're excited. We have lots of work to do to help advisors be successful and grow and help clients achieve their goals. SEI has been a giant proponent of goals-based investing and behavioral finance for decades. I mean, it might have been as early as the 80s. Prior to me even being here. So we've had the pleasure to work together a little bit, and I'm really excited about today.
Yeah, I'm really excited about today too. So in your role as head of products and solutions, can you tell us a little bit about what that entails?
Sure. So it's strategy development and client interaction and implementation.
Okay.
From advisory division. So our job is the platforms that the advisors and the investors interact with, along with the trading components, the custody components, and what we call advisory services, which is how to run an advisory business or an advisory practice.
Well, one of the things I know, like we've chatted a few times, and you talked a lot about like the technology that y'all are using, and your title, it doesn't intuitively make you think technology. Can you tell us a little bit about why technology is so important in kind of delivering the experience and the goals to advisors?
Certainly. So the nature of the advisors that we interact with, the independent advisors, they're all small businesses.
Yeah.
Right. And they're competing against people that are small businesses and people that are in giant businesses.
Yeah.
So when we look at technology, it does a couple of really important things for advisors.
Okay.
One, it aids their engagement with it, prospects and clients. A lot of times when investment companies sit back, they forget that advisors get clients long before we ever meet them.
Right.
So being able to reach all the way forward in the value chain and allowing us to interact with advisors' prospects as they're coming in the door, going through the financial planning process, and then ultimately opening accounts to implement that financial process, planning process involves our technology platform. A second piece is obviously is efficiency. And we have some great examples in our client base of how people have engaged with the outsourcing proposition and the technology and have massive efficiencies to show for it. A third component is community. We forget that these are small businesses and they're learning as they go in a lot of cases. One of our goals is to aggregate the wisdom of our client base and allow people to identify things that best fit their business.
Okay.
And learn from it and implement it in their business. And then last, measurement. So it's always easy to say you're getting better. You just don't know where you sit relative to the rest of the group. And we're in a rather unique position to have 10,000 clients and be able to look at it from that perspective.
You talked about community, which is interesting because you think about sometimes the business of asset management and wealth management as a very like personal business, and technology can kind of feel like you're disintermediating, you know, the wholesaler from the advisor from the client. But it sounds like technology is actually helping you build that community and kind of drive meaningful experiences. Is that kind of how you're thinking about it right now?
Yeah, I'll give you kind of a couple different takes on that. So technology always brings transparency and speed with it, right? So it always gives you information. The communities I was referring to in that case were the advisors' communities,
because
these are people sitting independently and figuring out the best way to grow their business. And they can either, you know, watch TV, read a book, go on the internet and try to figure it out, or they can talk to somebody and they have relationships with other advisors very similar to them. The reason they're running their own business is because they wanted to. They left a wirehouse or they left the bigger organization because they want to do it their way.
Yep.
They just want to find people like that. What's interesting, the other thing that technology brings to the investor, because that's really where you have to start, is it sorts out some of the confusion. The three of the big things that hamper investors from making decisions. One is the overwhelming information, right?
Yeah.
There's just, it's everywhere. What do you, and I was with friends this weekend and he showed me a spreadsheet and he says, what do I do with that?
Yeah.
Right? And not to mention, we in the investment world use words yep. that make it a little more confusing.
Yep. The
second piece is it gets complicated. So people frequently use independent, self-directed things for the easier piece. But the minute you get complicated and the implications of that wrong decision in a complicated situation seems bad,
yep.
again, you look for technology to help you sort that out. And the third one is getting the information together so the person can make an effective, fully informed decision and then see the implications of that.
Yep.
So these are the things that we're trying to look at to help investors make the right decision for their individual lives.
So we just had a coffee together. No surprise if you know me, we've had a drink together too. Mm-hmm. And you told me a yes. story about Home Depot, which yes. I think is kind of speaks to this overwhelming kind of options and how you boil it down. And it resonated with me because I've been in that situation. Do you mind kind of telling that story again?
Well, and I've told this a bunch of times, so if anybody watching has heard it, You can take 3 minutes off.
I heard it, but I want to hear it again.
But nonetheless, I still remember when you think about difficult decisions, one of the reasons that decisions are difficult is the overwhelming amount of information. Not knowledge, but information. And as I was walking into Home Depot one day, much like many of us, you get a little bit of anxiety as you're walking through the parking lot because you know when you cross those doors, it's going to be this massive selection of things that you don't even know your way through. In that particular scenario, I was trying to get a light bulb and I actually had it in my hand and I had difficulty finding the light bulb in the store. So how do you get to the right answer? And that was me picking a light bulb out, not trying to make sure I can retire effectively. In that scenario, advice is an orange apron that walks around the corner and in 4 seconds can point you to the right place. So we in the investment world use terminology and that sometimes gets confusing. There's complicated investment products that are very difficult when people ask us very simple questions. Can I retire? Right? Now there's a lot of variables to that, but none of them mean the word idiosyncratic in it, right?
Right. Right.
But we tend to use that word and use it correctly, incidentally, but we have to translate this overwhelming amount of information into something that's actionable for a client. And normally, that overwhelming information paralyzes the decision.
Yep.
And no decision is a mistake.
Yep. The way I related to that too, because I was in Depot and I was with my son, and we just kept on walking the aisles because I didn't want to look dumb in front of him because mm-hmm. I was like, I got this. He's five and he thinks I know a bunch more than I really know. So I was, we got this, but like literally hoping somebody would kind of bump into me and help us out kind of thing. And it's funny because we did a bunch of end user research. And one of the things that surprised me from the research was that retail clients don't want to look dumb in front of their advisor. So you almost have to like proactively meet them with some subtle education and really kind of think about how you can personalize your message to them. Is personalization kind of start to fall into how you're thinking about stuff and how you're using the technology?
Absolutely. Interestingly enough, and emotional intelligence works its way in here, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Three quick thoughts. One, my kids are a little older, so they call me out for doing silly
things.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's going to happen.
Yeah, waiting for somebody to come.
But I was just 2 weekends ago with a friend of mine and her financial advisor gave her sound advice about how to do changes to her house. She's blowing a wall out and
yeah.
putting a porch on or something. And she is just debt adverse. So when the person told her to take a home equity loan out,
yeah.
she had an allergic reaction that I don't think the advisor perceived.
Sure.
And I got to their house, they were peppering me with questions about this. And that was the right advice. It was just she hadn't wrapped her head around it yet. I mean, the thought of, I finally kind of talked her through what capital gains are and and can you deduct some of this and what's the right choice and what the market could be doing. But the interesting part is people are embarrassed about what they don't know. And they're kind of scared to have those conversations, which kind of brings us back to how can technology help enable us to have more meaningful conversations with people. To answer the question you actually asked, now that I got all the way around to it, was personalization comes kind of in two giant flavors to us. One is how we can interact with you digitally to have a meaningful collaborative relationship, not only with between the investor and SEI, but the investor, SEI, and the advisor. The three of us together to make sure that we can show them what they have and what the decisions mean, and then create a financial portfolio that's individualized to that one person. So again, using those words that lots of financial companies use, but lots of people don't understand, using a UMA, creating a household structure, setting it up so that individual person who is different than every other individual person has a structure uniquely tailored to meet that one goal that they've defined.
And is that, like as an advisor, does that, like, should be people be thinking like more does more products equal personalization? Is it less products equal personalization? Does the number of products matter? Like, how do you start to think about that?
Yeah, I think the number of products really doesn't matter. Yeah. Is the proliferation of product gonna nonstop? So without any facts behind it, I bet you we have too many.
Right.
Because people like me make them.
Right.
Right. But there are meaningful products and there's meaningful product innovation. Look at alternatives for a moment.
Yeah.
It is in a portfolio structure, an incredibly meaningful component that people are getting their head around. And finding out how it should fit in there next to all those other asset classes they're used to seeing, like equity, fixed income, and cash, right? But you have to know how it works. You have to know what it's supposed to do. And furthermore, the nature of the alternative market is there's a level of illiquidity there, right? So that hampers people from using it. I always think when I hear that you have to have a minimum investment to do it, I think that's just a matter of time before we reconcile that, because I can buy half a share of something on Schwab tomorrow,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So I should be able to get access to anything I want. I think access will be incredibly available to everybody. I just think people have to know how to use it.
And in terms of like balancing personalization and technology with relationship management, are you... You need to talk about practice management. Like, are you out there helping folks coach them on how to, you know, deal with all these tools and still build these incredible relationships? Or is the technology you're putting out there kind of enabling people to do that? Like, how's that balance?
So we started off as an outsourcing company, right?
Sure.
Doesn't sound super sexy, but that's what we are.
Yeah.
And we started by outsourcing investment management, and it allowed people to spend more time planning with their clients as opposed to trying. So we kind of carried that forward and outsourced all their operations.
Yep.
And we provide the technology on top of it. So what we think really happens is us by providing the transparency and the speed on the technology in a way that's really understandable to clients, that they can see it anytime they want. So like you and I with kids, you know, I remember when my kids were young, I could look at my investments like 11 o'clock on a Thursday night, right? That was my time and my advisor wasn't available at that time. But if we can provide information to them that's understandable, and maybe there's a question there, but maybe that's a question they can just email right then, or maybe that's a question they can set up on their calendar right then, as opposed to getting a statement or looking at some document that they don't understand. The other really big piece is understanding, is it achieving my goal, right? So we're in the investment world. We're going to always talk about returns because they're important. But achieving the person's goal is really what's important, right? And understanding things like, as you get closer, I want to de-risk that because you're there.
Sure.
You don't want to lose that.
Sure.
And then showing people that they're actually having some kind of impact. That impact could be, I'm ready for retirement.
Sure.
That impact could be, I can send my kid to college. You know, it could be lots of things, but making it meaningful to them in a way that's more than just, you got an S&P return.
Yeah. And when you talk about goals, like another word for goals is outcomes. Mm-hmm. And you can get to those outcomes by pulling on a whole bunch of different levers. Mm-hmm. So that starts to get into like that real holistic view of wealth.
Yeah.
Are y'all thinking about that and helping folks with that? And how's that going?
It is. And I didn't forget that I didn't actually get to the question you asked about practice management. I promise to circle back around to there. But to answer the question you did ask, holistic planning is critical, and investments is a part of it. So how we can bring to you a meaningful investment portfolio that meets your risk, because that's the one big thing. The magic is figuring out how it matches the person, right, and allows you to achieve your goals. But there's cash flow, like and then what do you do with that? There's debt. Yeah. How do you handle that? We help advisors kind of on multiple fronts in that world. That we, as an example, we assist with securities-backed lending. So if you need assets and from a lending perspective for short term, then we have an avenue for you. We have all sorts of investment products, to your point about kind of overwhelming information. To be able to select out of the, 4,000 US ETFs or the millions of fixed income security vehicles out there, just to be able to sort it together and put it in a structure where you understand this pile of things is going to help me with retirement. This pile of things is going to help me buy my new car. That pile of things is going to send my kid to college, and where I am on that world. That's your impact.
Yeah.
Your impact is knowing that you're in good shape so you can go back and have the rest of your life.
Yeah. And so is that, going back to kind of the practice management part of it, mm-hmm. are those conversations, like, is that where you're spending a lot of time helping mm-hmm. coach folks?
Yep.
Or are there other areas where you find yourself spending a lot of time coaching?
There's a couple different areas. So we've connected to practice management communities, right?
Okay.
So we have experts here at SEI that we have specifically dedicated to practice management and advice. Most of it revolves around a couple of things. The automation of workflows within my business.
Yep.
How to grow my business, and ultimately how to transition my business. Those are kind of the big topics. So we have a growth community,
yep.
right? So people that want to grow come there and they can kind of share information. We have a workflow community, so people can talk about that particular topic. And then we have Shauna Mace, who leads our advisor services group, who goes out and coaches people. Now, there is hundreds of thousands of advisors out there, so we have tools, we have interactive components that you can use to help you kind of look at we call one a business audit. It lets you know where you are and where you want to focus. It gives you a starting point.
Yep.
Right?
Sorry to interrupt, but yep. do you find that people are in like a certain stage, like they're only in the growth community, or do you, like, is there a chance that somebody could be in multiple different communities at once?
There are some that go into multiple communities.
Okay.
They usually end up focusing themselves in one because from a business perspective, they're usually kind of new,
yep.
growth, or kind of managing ongoing. But when we get to growth, it's interesting. You have people that grow and people that want to see what people are talking about when they grow, right?
Okay.
The operations community, we actually have, it was interesting because advisors have their administrative group, their administrative leads all talk to each other and share the best practices there. We have a local client who I see because she's local, she's in the office. She came in, so she's been working with us for about 5 years now. And when she came in, she was at, I'm going to say this, 34 clients per staff was her ratio at the time. Just saw at the end of last year, 71 clients
awesome.
Per staff. So is that a combination of using the investment approach and the outsourcing perspective, using the operational outsourcing, using the workflows? Yeah, it's a combination of all. She's a great, great person you can look at, and you say, she's constantly asking us for more. The reason I bring her up, and from a measurement perspective, is I'm always focused on what's possible, not what's average.
Sure.
And it's important to look at what's possible and the things that are important to you, or important to you as a business owner.
That's wild about Anne. So up to 71. Like, do you track NPS or like what she grew so fast, but was it productive growth, or how would you even think about kind of monitoring, or what would be a way that you would think about understanding if it was like really productive to get to 71?
So we have to, I guess you start with when I came in, this is kind of crazy to me, but I remember the first day I was at SEI, all those many pre-2000 years ago, I went to a group presentation to a bunch of new clients, and they walk up front and the first person says, "We sell time," which never quite understood what that meant as I sat there. But then I noticed I hear that more and more often around the industry. And that's really what we do, okay, right? So how does Anne and her staff manage so many clients effectively? Because you could manage more clients and you could just do it by taking time away from client experience and moving more towards managing clients, right? So that would be like, that'd be a negative choice. So she embraced three major components. She embraced our investment outsourcing proposition. So we have, call it 100 CFA type of people building portfolios. Cool. The concept would be, I could like investments and I could be good at it, but they're better, right? And what I'm really good at as an advisor is planning, so I should focus on that.
Yep.
Operational outsourcing, I've never met an advisor that says, I want to do my own fees, right? So we do all that kind of, I'll call it dirty laundry, right? To make sure you have time to spend with your clients. But in the case of Anne, keep in mind what she did in that period of time when she cranked up that number. She visits, she meets with every client four times a year, her and her staff. And in that same period of time, while she was increasing to that statistic of 71 clients per person, she got 50 referrals that year. So she didn't do it by sacrificing her client experience. Her informal MPS was 50 clients recommended them, her to another one of their friends.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. She's, and be honest with you, when I go out to the field, there's an Anne in every one of our states, every one of our territories. They're out there. It's why you focus on what's possible. And how we've changed as a company over time, we started off as TAMP, and we had an investment program with a custody system sitting behind it. And then the second thing is we put a front office technology component in there to be digitally collaborative.
Yep.
So how do we actually participate in the conversations between advisors and investors and make ourselves meaningful, but support the relationship? And then we went on to do an open custody platform. So we do it for more than just ourselves. We brought in strategic partners that do a fantastic job with us. And then the part we're really focusing on right now is personalization. So how do we bring an individual relationship to each and every single person from a technology and from an investment perspective?
So like the thing that is interesting to me is you talk about like participating in that relationship with an advisor and their investor, which I would guess that a lot of advisors would be super protective and wouldn't necessarily want you having a direct relationship with their clients. Is that true, or is there certain things that you do that is accretive to that relationship, and you've kind of broken through that? Like, how have advisors wrapped their head around it, or am I just kind of off on how they would think about it?
No, you're right. It's a matter of trust, in the words of Billy Joel, right?
Yeah.
Once they understand what we're trying to do, and they understand that we seem as a supporting cast for them. We're almost part of their organization.
Okay.
So it starts a lot of times with our salespeople interacting with their client events.
Okay.
Because our salespeople are very knowledgeable investment folks. And it's handy having them there to answer specific questions. So we kind of took that and then said, all right, how do we actually bring the voice of the expert to wherever that client is whenever they want to hear it, right?
Yep.
Because the reality is, if something happens in the market, you want to know. Or if, you know, if Mark Zuckerberg is on TV, you want to know what's cool about Meta at the time. So we can have a short recorded message from an expert back here in Oaks that can be distributed, and it's the advisor's call. Right, they can deliver it or not deliver it to their entire client base or to any part of their client base. They can put it on an email that they send out. So it's a matter of how we can support them and how they can show value, because when they come out and they hear these messages, that's why they tell them, that's why I picked this organization to work for. That's why they structure the portfolio. They spend 60 hours a week doing this while we're busy making sure you hit your objectives.
Yeah, that's cool. Like going back to like our research, we saw that like the hierarchy is an advisor wants to build confidence, but a gate to confidence is trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting with y'all because it's almost like you have to build trust to the advisor.
Oh yeah.
And then once you've built the trust with the advisor, you can also like help them build trust to the client as well. It's almost that two-step process.
And we become kind of the cavalry behind them in a lot of cases, right? So whether it's the people that are building technology to help them be collaborative with their client, collect their client information for them so they can do an effective financial plan, or it's their operational outsource that says that they get a wire into their account every month like clockwork, or it's the investment component where these people, their entire lives are built around understanding the intricacies of an individual investment product or an individual segment of investing. It's real value added, and then it gives people information that they actually can understand, right? So next time they're out, they can say, well, I'm part of my portfolio is in Meta, and Meta's doing a lot of investments in AI or something along those lines, which is very, it makes them feel good. It gives them a level of confidence in what's going on.
So if you had to summarize for the wealth professionals out there a couple key points on how y'all are partnering with them to bring value, how would you summarize that?
I think we constantly look towards the investor
and
say, what is the most critical thing we can deliver through this channel? When we look at the investor, bring the level of confidence to them, bring the level of trust to them that they can hit their objectives. Our roots are in behavioral finance. That's how we've grown up. That's what we believe in, and how we can structure a portfolio in a meaningful way in context of their life so they know they can hit their objectives and they can get on to the rest of their lives. From an advisor's perspective, we want to make sure that we can help them reach their success. And when I say their success, they left a big company to run their own company because they have their own idea what success is.
Yep.
We want to make sure we know what that is. We can help them meet that. It's confusing. It's overwhelming. Our job is to simplify and give people the best chance to achieve their goals.
And what do you see coming down the pike for y'all? Like where are you pushing your chips in to kind of make the bet? Is it kind of doubling down on the outcome based and really just getting closer to advisors and retail investors, or how are you thinking about what's next?
Two of the big things that we're doing right now is focusing on how we can assist advisors in their interaction with the investors. So when an advisor meets a prospect, they can connect through our platform. We can aggregate all their information. We can enable the financial planning process. We can execute the financial planning process, and then we can show you how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
Right. So the Kevin from 15 years ago when it's 11 o'clock at night and he's wondering if he's ever going to retire because he's exhausted. He goes, thank God I'm on. But the flip side of that, and we as a company are really focused on this, is alternative investments.
Okay.
Right? There's real value there. It's an incredibly complex space, and we have multiple divisions that have a tremendous amount of expertise in there. Our goal is to bring alternative investments to the rest of the world with the simplicity of a normal mutual fund.
Tell me more.
So in those cases, when we look at the illiquidity nature of it, right?
Yeah.
So the standard problem with an alternative fund is you can't get money in and out when you want to, right? So is there ways to fix that? Things like interval structures.
Yep.
The second piece that's kind of a bit of a hurdle for people is they always have these high minimums.
Sure.
We have a division that's one of the leading providers of services to hedge funds and alternative products. We have a custody organization that sits in another part of campus, and we have an advisory division which can construct a distributed portfolio, and we have an asset management group that can put it in the right portfolio.
Yep.
Between those four expertises, we can go from manufacturing to construction to distribution, and we can automate the entire thing front to back.
And do you think there's like latent demand for alts, or do you think you're going to have to put a lot of work from a practice management perspective in helping people position alts, or do you think folks understand it, and if you can deliver it effectively, like alts are going to start rolling into portfolios pretty regularly?
I'll answer them two separate ways.
Yeah,
is there demand for alts? Absolutely.
Right.
We're seeing it more in the independent RIA space than we are in the broker-dealer space, but I think it'll catch up. Do people understand alts? No, they don't.
Okay.
Right? People like alts when they go up.
Right.
People don't like alts when they're illiquid. Okay. So We remember the days when there were eighths on stocks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We fixed that.
Sure.
This is just the next thing we need to fix.
Okay. Yeah, I think next time maybe we'll talk a little bit more about alts. I think that would be an awesome topic. And maybe next time, speaking of it, we're good friends with all the SEI Canada folks. So maybe you come visit us in Toronto next time.
Thank you. I will be there in a heartbeat. Like you mentioned, we have an asset management business in out of our Toronto office for all of Canada. And I look forward to coming up and seeing everybody.
That'd be good. Well, thank you very much. Today was awesome. I appreciate it. It was good to catch up and hang out again.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
All right. We'll see you next time on the Frontier.
Well,
nice job, man.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
That was fun.
Can we get a pic?
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, I forgot to put this in my pocket.